Podcasting from London, Ontario, Canada, this is The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. An interview show where creative people talk about what inspires them to pursue their dreams and do what they love. And now, your host, Karis Thomas.
Hello, and welcome to The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. I'm Karis Thomas, and I'm here with my special guest, Sam Shoebottom. And Sam has been gracious enough to agree to answer some of my probing questions about what he loves and what he dreams about and his creative process and stuff like that. So thank you for coming, Sam, today. And I'm going to ask you my first question. I want you to tell me about Sambo the Clown.
Oh, Sambo the Clown. Well, first of all, thank you for me being the first guest. I'm quite excited about that. Sambo the Clown. It was just something that as a teenager, I did a weekend course on clowning and just really enjoyed it. They showed me, you know, some simple magic tricks, the use of the face paints and the different styles of clowning. So that was just sort of the aspect of the essence of the beginning. But yeah, and then it's one of those things, you're looking for a summertime job or you're looking for a job as a teenager. And I think I kind of went into business with my sister. She mentioned about, well, why don't you just become a clown? And I was like, well, yeah, that works for me. So we had to figure out a name. So my name just lends itself to be that way. So yeah,
sure,
you know,
does.
Yeah. So I taught myself how to juggle. I taught myself some more magic tricks, bought some props and like went onto some websites and, you know, sent away for some stuff and got, you know, printed up the business cards, and lo and behold, I had a job and like enough people knew me and my family and that. So it started from doing kids' birthday parties. I did a Volvo meet, a friend of mine that did it. So I would do like walk around for a couple hours, you know, entertain the children, but I'd have specific shows. When I wasn't doing a show, I'd just walk around and just entertain everyone and just talk with them.
So he was your first paying gig?
Pretty much, yeah. Actually, yeah. It was my first paying gig, if you want to say it that way.
And
yeah.
How long has Sambo, was he around for, and has he ever made a comeback?
Let's see. I think I started when I was about 16. 16, I went right through to about 19, just before I left for school. I did them, but no, after I started putting them away, I still have the magic tricks and I've used what I've learned for the juggling and all that. I've learned to do it without the face paint and that. When I worked for like Discovery Zone and Adventures on Wonderland and was hosting kids' birthday parties there, mm-hmm. I was still doing the juggling and I still did all the magic tricks and all that just without the face paint.
Well, maybe he's due for a reincarnation. You never know. So having that first training with a clown workshop, was that one of your first early experiences with being inspired by something, or were you inspired even younger?
Oh, I was inspired very, very young. I believe I was 5. Pretty sure that's, my mom likes to tell the story. It's when I was 5. The Mikado was on CBC, and it's the version, like the live-action, live-theater version from Stratford.
Mm-hmm.
That was like from the 80s.
The one that went to the Tonys.
Yes.
The whole way.
Yeah. So I remember being up and I was 5 and I think it was intermission and it was my bedtime and my mom said something about going to bed and I was just like, no, no, I really want to see the end. She thought, of course, I just wanted to stay up later, but I didn't fall asleep. She was always enthralled at how engaged I was in it. And the next day I would talk all about it and all about the different characters and what songs I liked.
Wow.
And that. So from that moment, it was from there on that I was, you know, putting plays on in my basement and charging. Well, I guess now since I charged my parents 25 cents to see them in my basement, that would have been my first paying gig.
Right. But 5 years old being inspired by Gilbert and Sullivan, that's a sophisticated 5-year-old brain.
Yeah, I've always loved that. It was like between that and then that just led me, that was sort of my first foray that I know of in the musical theater.
Okay.
And even like when I was in grade 6 at my public school, we did HMS Pinafore and I was the captain.
So what do you think that was? Do you think it was the wit or the comedy or the costumes or can you put your finger on anything?
I think it was the comedy. And then later, as I got older, realizing the wit of it, that that had that nice mixture of physical comedy and, you know, and just that outright, because I obviously, even at that age, the lyrics were way over my, you know, some of the wittier things of the lyrics, but...
Certainly the political humor, I would hope, be more than the five-year-old head.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It just, but yeah, I think it was sort of that comedy and just, and with the Mikado, it would have been like that costumes and the fascination of it that really drew me in. But then even by the time in grade six, doing HMS Pinafore and me myself having to understand the wittiness of the lyrics and that really drew me in too.
So if your mom realized at five that this was something you were going to be doing, when do you remember that you first realized that theater and performing and being a creative person was something that you just had to do?
Funny enough, I really don't think it was till the end of high school. Like, I'd always done it, but it was just something that I did. You know, it wasn't, it came easy for me. So it was like, I always found it fun. It was challenging, but I loved the challenge, so it wasn't hard. Like, I found it easy. Like, in English class, the moment that we did any kind of Shakespeare, that's when my marks went up.
Right.
As opposed to any other novel. You know, any other novel read, it was okay, but the moment we did any Shakespeare core part of any curriculum, that's when my marks soared, because I completely understood it. So it wasn't actually until it was sort of that trying to figure out what to do after high school, and I had applied to universities and colleges and was actually intent on going through for law school.
Mm-hmm.
And but then someone had mentioned, or actually I got a phone call from the American Musical and Dramatic Academy. I'd sent in my information and they said, well, we haven't heard from you. Would you still like to audition for us? So I was like, okay, sure. I was going to Toronto anyways for a Toronto Maple Leaf game. So I was actually going to be there on the day. So I did the audition during the day, and there was this little seminar later, and I actually asked if they didn't mind if I left a little early because I had tickets to the game. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, but these, of course, are Americans, not realizing.
Yeah. Although it is baseball, right?
Yeah. So, no, it was the Leaf game. It was the Leaf game.
Oh, okay, Leaf game.
So, no, it was just, it was sort of that, and I think... When I got the letter to go to the school in New York, it was that someone thinks that I can actually do this.
Ah.
You know, it's just, you know, you can be told by friends and family and everything that, oh, no, we really like you and you're funny, you have all that.
Right.
But I really think it was the
having the stranger validate it.
Well, yeah, getting that letter in the mail and it says you've been accepted to, you know, and you know that it's 10,000... You know that 10,000 kids auditioned and only 250 got in.
So, and little Sammy Shoebottom, Sambo the Clown's off to New York.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. So I think that would probably be that first realization of that this is something that I'm not too bad at.
So we're going to continue with that kind of thought. And at this point in your little life story here, you're heading off into New York and you're exploring all your creative outlets and learning all these techniques. And I want to know, what makes you be creative? And that could be a person, that could be a thing, that could be, you know, what inspires you or what kicks you in the pants to get up and go and do something?
It's for me, it's always been a multiple things. I've never actually nailed it down to one thing that, say, inspires me.
Right.
I've found inspiration through my family. Like, I guess one thing I said is the support of my family. My mom and dad were, like, they actually second mortgaged their house to send me to school. Because they're like, because I wasn't going to accept because I knew of the money situation.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, we're not letting money stop you from this kind of a... So, I mean, there's inspiration from there to, like, that faith that people have in you that sort of go, okay... One, though, you're kind of like, I don't want to disappoint them. You know, there's that little bit of pressure there. But my inspiration has always been, I found it in friends. I found it in people. I found it in strangers doing sort of something nice for me. You know, even when I've gotten, the first time I got commissioned for writing, because I'd written a couple of plays and then I got commissioned to write a play, it was completely different because I had a deadline. And I find that I work a lot better when I have a deadline.
Yes. Fear, the ultimate motivator.
Yeah, a little bit.
To kick someone in the pants.
Yeah, that I guess that works for me.
So if we're going to go along the same lines, like that's where you find your kick and your impulse to get going and become creative. And I think a lot of people out there will probably identify with the fear and the support and the family.
Yeah.
But we all have favorite bands or actors or films or shows or, you know, can you give us some of your...
I've always...
You know, like when you were little, who did you want to be when you were going to grow up?
Funny enough, I've always loved like John Candy, Jim Belushi. I remember those guys even like sort of through as a teenager. I really identified with them. It was always that comedy. And because I love to make people laugh. Mm-hmm. That is my... I mean, I know that I'm fully capable of doing dramatic stuff. And I know I'm really... I don't necessarily get as much chance as I'd like to do.
Right.
But I also know that I have a gift to make people laugh. And when I found that even as a young age, that was... I think it's the comedies. I've always loved comedies because I think if you can make someone escape whatever is going on in their life and just make them laugh, then you know what? For those 2-3 seconds, they're not thinking about the bad stuff that's going on in their life. So I think it's basically that comedies that is always... That's where I find...
I know when we worked on Treasure Island, you said similar things about playing Squire Trelawney and how he was the comic relief and how much you enjoyed finding that sort of zany character.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, and I mean, go along with, because I know that they're a favorite of yours, but I'll admit that loved the Muppets growing up. I love that, the aspect of them and just, that fun that they always had.
Right.
And I mean, I have to admit, watching it as an adult, it's completely different, but it's great, just as great. For like, I can't believe I watched this as a child, some of those episodes.
Because?
Oh, just some of like the sexual innuendos and just some of the actual jokes that
went
like,
over your head that when were, you were
five. That's why my parents were laughing. Right. That's why they sat down and watched the show with me.
Right.
I think they were a little bit, but it was just that the comedy genre is one of the biggest inspirations, I'd say, for me.
So you've inspired me to ask about being in a genre. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned a bunch of comedy styles or types or performers that seem to have a sort of similar zaniness to them, and each of them are unique in their own right, but they certainly sort of fit into a class, I think. Mm-hmm. It would be fair to say. So my question off that is, do you strive to fit into a particular genre, or do you strive to be unique?
I'd like to go for the uniqueness. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really want people to see more of my, say, serious acting, or I've established myself as the comedian, as a comic, on stage. So, and just for me, not that they're necessarily more of a challenge, I think it's more that challenge to break that image of Sam Shoebottom, in the sense of that, oh, Sam's in the show, so it must be a comedy, or he's the comic relief. And so, I mean, I've enjoyed actors that have done that. Like, I enjoy Jim Carrey. I enjoy the fact, there's tons of actors that have made bad choices. I've been in shows that haven't been the greatest. You realize that as an actor.
Not always your control.
Exactly. So, but I remember some people, I'm trying to think of what movie it was that he was in, that some people just didn't like it, but it was like, he just wasn't the stereotypical, The Majestic, that's what it was.
Oh, right.
That there was like, he wasn't the stereotypical Jim Carrey.
It wasn't what they expected, no. So they didn't like the film.
Yeah, they didn't think they liked the film. But like, if you actually just watch the film, he does such a great job because you actually get to see him act. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those.
And Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Like when you get to see him.
When I get to see him doing something more serious, I'm just so impressed. But most of his fans just want to see the crazy humor.
What movie? Oh, I was watching Real Steel last night with Hugh Jackman.
Okay.
And it's one of those things that he's having this touching moment with his son and about, you know, how he's abandoned him and all this. And I remember saying to my sister, I go, I love watching actors in movies like this, because then you can realize they actually act. They are actors.
Right.
That he isn't bent to just be Wolverine, and he isn't just the, you know, action star. Like, I mean, he's done enough. There's no, but I always love seeing actors come out of their shell, say, or what they're, everyone's always
what
used to seeing them.
Pigeonholed them in.
Exactly. Yeah. And realize that, wow, they're an act, like they can act. Not that you didn't think so before, but
right.
You like their range. Whereas you have seen other actors that have tried it, and you know, guess what? You can't do that.
Right.
You can only do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm always inspired when I see someone who I think is only one flavor.
Yes.
Bring out something different.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, Sam, I mean, you've already said that if people go to see a show and they know you're in it, they're making an assumption that it's going to be a comedy. So sort of a two-part. Do you think that there are any misconceptions out there about who is Sam Shoebottom? And is there any particular thing in your work that you'd really like to do that either you're not sure you could, or you're not sure anybody would see you in that mold? So that's almost a three-parter. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I think it's just the fact that, I mean, it's my own doing, is the fact that I've done mostly comedies. That's not, but like, I would have really loved to say, have more people have seen me in Assassins last year.
Right.
So that they could have seen those two monologues of Sam Beck.
He wasn't very funny.
No. And because that was one of the things that the best compliment that I had by people that knew me, that they came back and they're like, you really scared me.
Nice.
That you like that wasn't Sam up there. That wasn't who. And I'm like, thank you. Good. Yeah. I'm glad. Because that's what I'd worked for.
We were some scary people.
Yeah. So I guess it's just more chances of that. And I just know that I'm maybe not offered those just because of, say, who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's like, not necessarily, I don't even know if it's, they don't necessarily think I am capable of it. And that could be it. Just because they haven't seen me in those roles.
Right.
But I think that's the more that maybe there is a little bit of preconceived notion of that, you know, Sam Shoebottom is more than just the funny guy. He's capable, that I do have a good range of my acting. At least I think so. And, you know, I've gotten compliments enough for people who I respect their opinion, who wouldn't, you know, unless they lie to me, they're not saying it to me just to be nice.
Right.
That they actually tell me the truth.
So is there a dream role or a dream, and this can be future, past, present, like when you were little, did you want to run away and join blank? Would you love to play this part? And even if, as you're saying, it's completely against type, physical type, emotional type, any of those, even if it's out of your vocal range, like, would you love for somebody to rewrite such and such just for you? I mean,
that's a really good question.
Everybody knows I'm crazy for the Muppets. And if I'd known that you could run away and join them when you were little, I would have done that.
Right. Yeah.
I did not know that they accepted people.
Yeah. not as a kid. I don't think there's ever that, I want to run around. Like, I knew I had that creative side, but I was the sports kid. Like, I played soccer. I played all sports. I found myself, say, more well-rounded as a kid, that I didn't feel like,
right.
I didn't necessarily want to run off because I felt, oh, that's where I belonged. Because
so you left your AMDA audition for your Leaf ticket.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's one of those where I found I was just as comfortable on the soccer field or on playing baseball or playing sports as I was.
And you didn't want to run away and join a sports team?
No. It just, I was very content. Of, I mean, I think I'll admit that probably I never actually played hockey, but I played lots of road hockey. And there was always that scoring the winning goal, Stanley Cup, Game 7, Stanley Cup, you know.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, all young kids. Yeah, exactly. That happened many times on the streets of Bryanston.
Yeah.
But I don't ever recall wanting to be one thing in particular. That drive to say, oh, I want to, you know, that, because I said I was just happy playing sports. Right. And then when I wasn't playing sports, I was doing something creative. And so
if we're going to say, take this to present day or somewhere in the future, is there a role out there? Maybe against type.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, there are so many great roles. That's the thing.
You don't have to pick one. You can give me two or three.
Because I know, I'll say one from my past.
Okay.
Was from this play called Greetings, where I played a mentally challenged young man.
Nice.
And then, but he gets possessed by a spirit. It happens around Christmas time. And basically the concept is it's a Catholic family. The other brother, my brother, the other son brings home a Jewish girl and says he's going to marry her.
Hmm.
So, of course, that's the sort of the premise and the conflict in the family. And so I went from a character going, oh boy, and wow. That was the extent of my thing, to all of a sudden at dinner time, I was saying things like, it's a simple matter of rearranging atoms. And so it was great to had to create these two different characters living in the same body.
Right.
And to have an audience realize simply by my posture or, you know, my mannerisms of who I was.
Well, you were changing your personality.
So it was one of those really first challenges, and I got that right early when I came back.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed that. It became a dream role because of the challenge.
Nice.
And just that the best compliment I ever got was from my sisters because they said they forgot that I was their brother.
Wow.
You know, like that. And again, there was comedy in it. I had some comic lines, but there was that seriousness. So it was that fine line.
So that balance.
Yeah. So there's that really nice balance. And it's one of the most balanced roles I think I've ever had. I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to think. I love, like, even say the devil in Damn Yankees.
Okay.
I know it's a comic role, that comic role, but.
Yeah, but he's got some dark edges.
But yeah, there's always that nice darkness that, and I guess that's, and it's, I like that, you know, ironically with my smile, it's that nice smile, but saying evil things,
yeah.
It means something completely different.
It really can. So, oh, you'd be great as him.
Yeah. So I think that's sort of one I saw Jerry Lewis. Yeah. Is it Jerry Lewis? Yeah, Jerry Lewis. From the telethons, right?
Right.
Yeah, I saw him on Broadway.
Okay.
When I was in school, he played the devil when I was on Broadway.
And
Victor Garber.
I saw Victor Garber.
And that. So that would probably be just because it's that fun musical role.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. Actually, he is the devil again. It's another role. But it's, I can't think of the show now. Sorry, maybe it'll come to me.
Oh, it's all right.
But it was another.
Let you off the hook.
It was sort of an Irish. It was one of the Irish plays I saw.
Oh, Seafarer.
Yes.
Yes. And play the Kieran Hines role.
Yes.
Oh.
Another actually one that I don't know. I think my voice. I'm not quite in my range.
Mm-hmm.
But why can I not lead? It's Company.
Okay.
The lead.
Bobby.
Bobby. Thank you. I was gonna say Billy, but I knew that was wrong. Yeah, Bobby. Just because. I remember seeing that show, and one, it just reflected of me that I was like 33,
right.
34 at the time when I saw it. And it's like, you know, I had all these friends that they're married, and, well, why don't you, you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and just sort of seeing them in their lives. So it had that connection, but I just really liked the role itself.
Right.
That it had that little bit more deeper meaning, and just even in a musical, there's always that, when you can find that sometimes in musicals, I love light, fluffy, have fun musicals, love them.
Sure. But if there's more colors,
then that's even great too.
Yeah. Well, it's another great Sondheim.
So that'd be like, I'd probably say probably those two are way up there in roles.
Cool. Well, this summer, very soon actually,
yes.
By the time this airs, you will have run away from London for your own adventure.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm leaving for Edmonton for... I'm saying for a few months. It could be
but
longer.
But it's open-ended.
Yes. There's no set return in the sense that in a few months, maybe reevaluate or whatnot. And sort of go, you know what? I'd rather be back in London. Or I really like it out here in Edmonton and I'm going to stay. My sister lives just out there, so I'm going to stay with her for a few months. Going out, I'll find a job out there. I've already been posting for jobs. And it's just funny how... something here in London when they're asking for so much out of a minimum wage job and that you want this kind of criteria and then you want some experience. Where out in Edmonton, it's like, can you speak, read, and write English?
Wow.
We'll train and we'll pay you $5 more an hour.
Wow, the demand is that good out there.
And this is like a simple cleaning job. It's sort of a simple cleaning job. Mm-hmm. They all start at $14, $15 and it's all, we'll train, you don't need anything. A parking lot attendant to sit there. With 18 plus benefits. Found a for construction to hold the sign is $24 an hour.
Yes. Well, I think you're more creative than any of those jobs.
Oh, yes.
I hope they just help you pay for this adventure.
And that's what the aspect of even my mom mentioned about, like, you know, you can keep that in the back of your head that, you know, you're doing it for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there for you to, so you have money.
You don't often get to just drop everything and take off on an adventure like this. So I'm very jealous.
Yeah, I know. And it says it just fit right in the timing in my life that there's just nothing really holding me here in London. I did actually have to turn down a show.
Oh.
Actually, I'd already been cast as a show and I had to sort of make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 39 Steps that the Palace is doing. And it's one that I love. I love a show. And that's actually how I knew that I actually needed this adventure, is how quickly I was able to make the decision of to email the director and producer and say, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to turn, you know, I'll return the script. And this gives you a whole month to find someone else and for them to learn the lines.
Well, I know that team's going to be sad to not have you around.
Yeah.
I'm chomping at the bit to get working with you.
I'm sad about it, but it was actually when I really came to think about it, how easily it came for me, and knowing how much I love the show, how easily it was to make that decision that I'm like, I need this.
Yeah.
I need this even just maybe as a recharge in my life of where I am, that to even to come back to London with a different perspective, a different way to look at it. And just to take those few months and sort of reevaluate. I don't want to say soul searching. I don't want to do that. But
no, you're recharging your creative energies.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Because I feel very stalled right now.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
So you
chose an adventure song.
I did.
And you want to tell us about what song you chose?
I chose Moving Right Along from the Muppet Movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know that you're a fan of Muppets, but you know as well that I'm a fan of the Muppets as well.
Yep.
And I don't know. I think it was the first thing that sort of sprang to my mind in the fact that, you know, I'm leaving from when this airs, it'd be this Friday in a few days. And it's just that fact that, you know, I'm driving cross country, that I'm leaving here. I'm going up north to my cousins in Parry Sound first, and then I'm continue driving all the way into northern Ontario and across the prairies. So I'm doing a cross country, cross Canada car ride.
Yeah.
And so I think that, with just being on my mind and everything, and I thought that's the perfect song.
Yeah.
And the fact that I mentioned Saskatchewan in it.
Yeah.
and
you'll be there.
And I will be crossing
You'll have to take pictures at all sorts of important stops.
Exactly.
And tweet them for people to see your adventure.
Definitely. So, but yeah, that was one of the main reasons that I just I chose that song.
All right. Then we'll get ourselves set up, and then we'll have Moving Right Along from the Muppets.
Excellent.
Sung by me and Sammy.
Thank you.
Touching a hand, wondering why it's time for saying goodbye.
Or yellow cabot.
Cabot?
Yeah. Moving right along, footloose and fancy free.
Getting there is half the fun, come share it with me.
Moving right along,
we'll learn to share the load.
We don't need a map to keep the show on the road.
Hey, that song's sounding better, Sammy.
Yeah, I try.
And
your way is my way.
So trust my navigation.
In California, here we come, the pie in the sky land.
Palm trees and warm sand.
Though sadly, we just left Rhode Island.
Wait, what?
Just forget it. Moving right along. Send someone to fetch us, where in Saskatchewan? Move right along.
You take it, you know best.
Hey, I've never seen the sun come up in the west.
Huh?
I don't know, it must be the prairies.
Thanks for joining us at The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. We'd love to hear from you, and you can do that at thelovers, thedreamersandyou.com or by finding us on Twitter or Facebook. This has been a Luke Bainbridge production. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, and we'll see you next time for another edition of The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You.
Life's like a movie, write your own ending. Keep believing, keep pretending. We've done just what we've set out to do. Thanks to the lovers, the dreamers, and you.
Okie dokie.